Blog Talk Radio.
Alafia, greetings. We're having a little technical difficulty, but we're still on the air, live and well. So how is everyone doing this evening? Have a happy, happy Black Love Week. Wishing you a happy love week. This is the week for Valentine's Day. And I'd like to say I am your host, Omienka. Omienka 7 coming at you live this evening, and I want to bring you a part of our all-new series. This is our fifth series on, well, the fifth episode, the first series, and we're working on mind, soul, body, and spirit, and we are talking about the family right now, dealing with the students and the children and the schools that we put our children in. The main thing we want to talk about is how does the African-American make their selection of schools? Do they always go with the public school? Or if there is a private operated school ran by Black establishment in their communities, do they support those schools? Should they support those schools? Let's talk about it, family. We definitely want you to talk about it, and we want you to call into our station and talk about it and give your input as to what you believe should happen. I want you to understand that getting involved with privately independent schools is the right way to go. It might make for a better venue for your child to be in a setting of their own community rather than driving your child out to somebody else's community outside of your boundary lines. Unfamiliarity will be, and in those children they can find serenity and they can find safety in being closer to home, where you can be reached at a shorter distance of time rather than driving them out to the suburb. Now, we're talking about Black-owned businesses, and we know that we always advocate supporting Black-owned businesses. And an independent school is what we consider a Black-owned business. Why would you have someone go out of their way to put themselves in arm's danger with going under, as most businesses do, to service your community and your child and your family without you supporting them? We need to take a survey of the Black community to get a quorum as to what does the statistics show. how many of these people in this community are going to support our Black ran school. Now, I'm sure you all know it by now that our dear brother, Dr. Umar Johnson, has been putting together for over several years now the foundation for his plan to start an all-Black male school that is actually a school away from home. It is not the regular school where you go and come home. He wants a school that's overnight where the child can stay. I don't know if he's decided to formalize that yet, but I understand that's what he initially wanted. Now, we have to look at his example. We have an example for Dr. Umar Johnson, and I am in full support of this Black man who is a doctor and psychiatrist that specializes in working with failing Black boys. I am a full supporter of what he's doing. First of all, let's get it clear. A number of times we have Black families who are somewhat skeptical about Black-ran businesses as whether or not they are going to be ran on the up and up. But I'm sure that you must realize that Dr. Umar Johnson had to have done his homework. He had to have gathered statistics and got marketing strategy as to how has gone outside of his community. And I understand that he has found a location in Delaware. And that is one of the locations. And I'm so happy and pleased for Dr. Umar Johnson. And I want to give him kudos and two thumbs up for following through. Because there for a minute, ladies and gentlemen, and you just have to admit it, everybody was jumping on that man and was against him. They were calling out false information about he didn't have a degree, he wasn't a doctor, he wasn't a clinician, and that he had spent the money. I knew all along that that was a lie because his father had testified on his behalf that he wasn't that kind of man that would walk away with the church's money and not produce a product. He's been working feverishly, looking and searching high and low for the best location for this school. I think personally he has to do the right things by these Black children. I think he is committed to this path of life, of working in the field, of being a servant rather than someone who is taking like the Dead Sea. So I want to say for the record that this one is going out to those who have made it up in their mind to create an independent school for our Black children who are suffering and are failing at the hands of the public school. I am a public school prior teacher, so I know that there is a problem. The charter schools coming in and are owned by the government and are still not considered as private. They're taking over. I understand we have a lot of interest coming in. Then why not accept Dr. Umar Johnson? He is not a part of the establishment. He is an independent contractor, and he works to do the work of a psychiatrist. Now, why not accept him? He's an independent businessman, and he also has a heart for the children and the parents. He's developed several parenting support groups. Now, we ought to get behind Dr. Umar. You teachers out there, if you have anything to give, even though the school might not be in your venue or your area, send in your support. Because you could do a lot across the airways to help this man get started with the school. He is a one-man show now. He needs a support team from everywhere and from all those gifted and special teachers. I've already told the world that a school has to have a support system, and that is the parents. There needs to be a parent's resource center because you know what? Because you're going to have to wean these African-American parents off of special education. It won't be easy. Most of them are attached to special ed, and they are habitually depending on special ed to care for their children during 8 to 5, so they don't have to manage a disruly or corrupted child. Now, let me say this. You can whip children into shape. A lot of what's going on with our children is pure laziness. And I don't have a dad at home. Some of the mothers are purely tired, I know. And they don't have the energy to work up a whole plan after they come off of their job to reinvent school at home. That is why you need good schools that are going to come into your community and make a difference and take up the mantle for your absentee significant other. And that is what is wrong with our children. It is not special ed. I've never met a pure special ed child yet, except for a handicap, a child who was born with a disability. These so-called labels and tags that they're putting on children has been excessive, because behind those labels and tags lurks money, tens and thousands of dollars for getting them labeled, getting them referred, and getting them medicated. Dr. Umar knows all about the scams and mothers getting children diagnosed with attention deficit, with hyperactivity and without hyperactivity, and getting them diagnosed so that they can obtain a check of about $600 a month. That's a lot of money to a school child who doesn't have a job, and it's certainly a lot of money to a mother who's sitting at home in front of Jerry Springer and not working. Not all of you, but there's some mothers who are not checking homework. Some mothers who are not reviewing the work with the child. There's some mothers that are not even signing off on the homework. Shame on you, mothers. We've got to make a ploy to get these mothers straight, because not all done can't read. Now, when you set these schools up, let me give a word of caution to anyone that's going to run their own private school. I know, because in the choice setting, I work with a team of people when we set up a school. And was there problems? Anything you can think of, it existed and it happened. And when you're introducing the curriculum, that's the first thing you must do to get your parents to come out and support you. Introduce the curriculum. Make sure you understand the curriculum. Make sure you're introducing something that is on the cutting edge. It can't be the old okey-doke unless you are going to have the best teachers to implement that curriculum. It might lie right there in that box in the corner, and those teachers might be teaching without the aid of that great curriculum. So curriculum discussion must go on periodically before the school gets open. You invite the parent in to look over the curriculum, to handle it, to test drive it, to even see that it might be the ticket for the cutting edge material that your student needs. I do know this as a curriculum specialist. One of the things we have to really guard ourselves against is spending too much money repetitiously on all the new whistles and bangs that come out instead of getting into the bulk of the material that we currently have to see how it can be adapted to the individual child's need. Every child must have an IEP, not just special needs children, because every child has a methodology from learning 4 or 5 ways through dealing with their learning style. So you must create an IEP for every child. So this child is getting individualized assistance. So whatever curriculum you decide to use, whether it be John Dewey, Maria Montessori, a P&J effect, you must be able to introduce a curriculum that's on the cutting edge. Now, let me give you a for instance with Maria Montessori. Her material is not patent. Anyone can use that label. And you can introduce that Montessori alternative for children who need to take their time and who need to process through the material independently. We are giving the children far too much one-on-one. Let's introduce the child to the material in small groups. Then place it on the shelf and have that child to go back and pull that material off the shelf, revisit what we've taught them, and implement what they learned. Do this over and over again, repetitiously. Rote learning is where that will begin. Not you just teaching rote learning. They will produce the rote learning for themselves by using that puzzle over and over again. And then when we come and do the assessment, we can check to see if that child has mastered that task. Then we can check off on it. Most people think Montessori schools are where children just run wild, do what they want to do. Nobody says encodes, decoding, murmur, diphthongs, and working directly with them in language. That's what we have got to really guard against. They assume that the child will teach himself to read. No, Johnny won't be able to teach himself to read. You're going to have a bona fide English language learner who is sitting there in the corner with the to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm calling back into a live show. This is your Omi Inka coming back at you. And where I left off at, we must make sure that our children are getting a foundation of reading. When that curriculum is introduced, you must make sure that there's a reading specialist there to deliver that curriculum. It's not so much that you can have a curriculum without having the appropriate teachers to deliver it. You must unlock the key of literacy in order to be able to encode and decode. So the first fundamental is that every child shall read, reading across the curriculum. And whatever you're doing on a curriculum throughout the day, you are stopping to make sure that reading is done throughout the curriculum. It's not just done during reading time. So the curriculum is a must that the parent gets to look over the curriculum, gets to examine the curriculum, and to test drive the curriculum. And what I mean by test driving the curriculum, have the parent come in on a Saturday or a Sunday, have them to allow the teacher to implement these curriculums to show the parent how it works, and have an actual handbook and a supplemental material that goes home so that you can begin to have the parent sign off on agreeing to the fact that they will take ownership of this material and drive it home. And not only put it on the shelf, but use it to make sure Johnny is implementing outside of the classroom indications that they are rote learning and mastering and teaching to mastery. The only way you can teach to mastery, you must have the cooperation of the parent. So when that child comes back in and is tested, you test that child to 80% passing rate. Now, curriculum has to be marketed all over town. It has to be up in lights. It has to be showboated, and it has to be inviting. And in every street corner, you'll see something about this outstanding curriculum that you're going to introduce. Otherwise, you don't have a program. Having children there without the appropriate curriculum and program that will intrigue the parent to come and induce the knowledge in the child. You're not teaching the child anything new. He has the capability of reading within him, but you must induce the knowledge. So the environment is the next thing. Wherever you're going to have this venue in this building, you must have a venue that is capable of producing knowledge in the child, drawing out the knowledge. The environment must be set up appropriately so it invites the child to learning. Not just a bunch of books and a box, but every area has a theme that's set up that will intrigue the child to want to come in to learn on their own terms. And this is what we haven't been giving children. We've been teaching to the test. We have been teacher outcome based and not child outcome based. That is why I recommend John Dewey as well as Maria Montessori, because the child sees a beautiful corner where everything is directly set up in its proper place, so they know when they take something away, they must put it back in its proper place. Nothing out of order thrown around. Every object has a home. And once you teach a child to respect his material, he will make sure that material lasts, and you won't find yourself repeatedly buying those objects over and over again because he or she has misused the material. So teaching the child to respect the material and not to misuse it, even though they come in and they see it in an orderly fashion, you tell them, at the end of the day, we clean everything up and put it back in its proper space. It is our responsibility to maintain these materials so that we are not wasteful. So the parent comes in. The parent spends some time in observing. You have to get the parent in the picture. The parent must come and observe her child, and she must spend at least 20 hours a year in that classroom volunteering for something. I don't care if it's to tutelage a child or to act as an aide, or as to work on putting up bulletin board and helping out in the kitchen, wherever you need the help. Because once you start these independent schools, it is ran off of volunteer time. I must tell you that. The parents have to mandate and sign off on 20 hours a year that they will donate to that school. This is how you keep the school running. And when there is an absentee teacher, you can have other parents fill in. With the aid of the substitute, of course. You don't want the classroom to be ran by itself. You want to have a list of substitutes that you can call in, because every now and then you have to anticipate that a sub will be needed because a teacher might have to take off or come in late. Now, our environment. What do we have in our environment? We must have a living, working environment. What do I mean? Every school has a theme for each grade level, and hallways are decorative of all the children's work displayed. But every school has a theme and a motto. You carry that theme out throughout the hallways. If it's with geographical continents that each child or each grade level is displaying, you have the teachers come together before the school opens, and you map out what is our theme going to be, how will we carry this theme throughout the school building, and how will we design our map so that everyone knows that they're in a different continent when he goes to Mr. John's hallway, or when it comes to Mrs. McIntosh's hallway. They're experiencing this learning as if they're traveling through a mine. And it will be an opportunity for your child to travel, to look forward to advancing from second grade to third grade. And you must sharpen the children's skill. You cannot have an independent school without someone to defend your hypothesis and your theory. If you have a theory that every child can learn, you must build an army to defend that philosophy, and that army of children will march for you. I don't care that they don't go to war. They are practicing. They're getting in position. Every class has a drill team, and this is to sharpen their skills so that before they go to work in that classroom, they realize that this is a live, real situation, that they're coming to their drill team to get prepared, and that every part of that building is ran like the real world. There is a bank in that building where they can go and deposit their ducats or draw their ducats out. There is real cash money that they possess in their school, with preferably their school mama mater or their picture on that money. This is money that they can take and buy at any time and use at any given time in your classroom, where they take that money that they've earned through positive reinforcement, through academic excellence, and they take that money every morning after the drill is done. They're all issued their money. They're paid. These are workers. These are not just some children that happen to come to school. You pay your children for coming to school and let them know that you are happy that they're there today and that there is a paycheck waiting for each one of them who have served their community well. This is a community you're dealing with. So when they see they have a bank there at the front door, and there are positive reinforcement training that the teacher goes through, that when a child does something good, you reward that child. This is in order to keep down bad behavior. When you reward for positive endorsement, you don't have to worry about disciplining a child, because every child wants to be on task and every child wants to be rewarded. And then not only have a reward where they're silently given a gift, you make show of it, make an openly show once a week. You're bringing all those children to the auditorium, and they're extended their gifts for outstanding jobs done well for the whole school to see. And then they take their ducats and purchase gifts right there at the particular pep rally where they're being rallied. Then now when they come back to the class, they're settled. They know they mean something. Their self-esteem is up. They feel good about them. They're in competition. Children like competition that will allow everyone to win. And we don't want to shame any child to make him feel like he can't heed. Every child can heed. So we build their self-esteem through these pep rallies and award services. So now they got a reason to come to school. They got a whole store. They got a shopping market. They don't have to worry about going home and being hungry. They can do their shopping at the school before they leave. You got stuff that you can go to anybody's restaurant and say, donate it to my children. Donate your rolls that you're going to throw out after 2 or 3 days so they can come here and they can buy their supper when they take it home with their dollars that you created for them. They don't have to ever worry about stealing because they got money in the bank. You must show them that they're rich and that they can become rich with these ducats. And they can use that money to buy whatever they want in that store. And when Christmas time comes, they buy all their gifts from themselves, keeping their money in a community. This is how I ran my school. And people wondered, how did you get these children to adhere to this? Because I gave them something back. I didn't just let them come in there and wish that they had extra money so when they went home, they could have dinner. I showed them that that school was their refuge. That school was their community. That school was where they worked at, and they could also buy from themselves, and they could also take money home to show their mother that they are working hard and that that money will allow them to buy even clothing, jewelry, and everything you can think of, teachers. You put it in your store. My store was loaded with everything, and the child was so enlightened when he came to my room and said, "Is this all mine? There's no reason for you to steal from yourself. You own it all." And that's why our children have been such thieves and ending up in jail for stealing little trinkets, because they didn't see a way that they could be able to barter for those things. Teach your children about bartering and letting them know that bartering is very important. Let them determine what other items can be used as money, not only just the paper currency. Show them about gold and trinkets. Teach them how the world works. Then they will heed and they will learn to read, and they will do everything you ask them to do because they want to be pleasing to you. This drill team, you must not take it lightly. It is a very necessary thing. People came from all over to view my little drill team of preschoolers, 3, 4, and 5 years, who could take command and take over the class and run the class for me when I had to step out. They knew the drill. They knew the order, as you were. Relax yourself. They knew the drill. Right face, left face, front and forward. They knew the drill. I had drill teachers coming to see what kind of soldiers was I making. And these soldiers didn't want to miss a day of school. Their attendance level went up. So you'd be improving attendance level starting with your preschooler. Don't wait and say, I'm going to start with the middle schoolers. No, start with your preschoolers. These are babies. And as they do their drill, teach them the affirmations. This is where you begin to teach them about their history in the affirmation. Allow them to help run the school. When Black History Month comes, let them take over the microphone to discuss with the children about the course of the day and about Black History Month. What does it mean to them? Allow them to record information about the outstanding heroes and sheroes. This is how you make a Black school that will intrigue children to want to be there. And also, the parents will never leave. I had parents that parked out front that decided to stay the whole time their child was there, and I was reprimanded for so many parents in the building because I had them working. They were working. They were busy in my classroom putting up posters, putting up bulletin board, checking papers. They were running things. So if I had to step out, the program would continue to go on. We think a teacher is what makes the show and the world go around. No, it's your parents that you train. And they will be careful not to let that school fall down. It is their place of refuge. It is their employment. It belongs to their children. And they will hold on to it like dear life. I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that when parents came to my class and had real issues like their Social Security check didn't come or they need to fill out an application, we developed a parenting room to offer assistance to those parents because sometimes they couldn't go down to Social Security and get no help. They couldn't go up to the welfare and get no help. Then the most important thing that I want to tell you, some of these mothers are the first teacher I know, but some of them are really good teachers. I mean that. And if they have special needs children, according to the laws that I read, they are entitled to apply for a job with the government and acquire a government job. So teach them as if they're going to go to work, because when those little ones all leave you, then you might want to put that mother to work in a real job. Help that mother to acquire her child development credentials so she can go to a real job, or help that mother to become an advocate so they can advocate on behalf of special needs children. Now, these are just some of the things that I'm dreaming up from my over 36 years of teaching, well, actually 40 in the profession, but 36 in the classroom. These are some things that I'm telling you that mothers, you can ascertain from these independent private Black schools that are ran. Don't run from those schools. Support your own. And don't say, I can get a better deal over here in a private white school uptown where I have to drive out of the city. You must understand your child has to be sensitized to that community, and sometimes through the bumps and the curves that they're going through to get adjusted to work and live around other Caucasians can be problematic. and your child could never get on with learning because they're too busy learning how to get along with other customs and traditions. Some people think it's better to put your child in an all-white school opposed to a struggling poor black school. Well, let me say this. I've had my child in private schools, and yes, I had to pay out of my pocket, but there were times that I wished she had had the black experience and learned something about their custom. So I made sure I took them to all of the settings that I was in whilst formalizing the Carter G. Woodson all-black school. And when we find someone like Dr. Umar who has struggled to get you to see that he's not going to spend your money, that he's going to be the best therapist as well as administrator, you've got to hold out for some hope. You can't go interrogating the man, tearing him down, going to the white man on the man. We've got to stop this stuff. What is wrong with us? We don't give our people any benefit of the doubt. We assume that they're criminal before we check the facts. You did a job on Dr. Umar, and you're not done. You are not done. Let me tell you about your dirty laundry. You are so dirty that you would allow that man to set that school up and you will still come against him, even though your child is learning to read, learning to heed, learning to respect himself, and to develop some self-esteem. You will walk away still being an accuser because the Bible said that you will be the accuser, that the devil comes to rob, steal, and to kill, and to accuse. And you are right on the money accusing people that are your same culture and he. We've got to look in the mirror and learn to love ourselves and to believe in each other, irregardless of whether black or hue, and you're on the white end of it. Who cares what your color is? We're talking about your character. Dr. Umar exemplifies character, and he puts down the demand, no weaves. I don't blame him. You come in with this fake hair, you have the attitude that you're one of the white women in drag, then you're going to carry on that same nonsense in his school. He doesn't want it. And he has a right to make that as a prerequisite. If you go to the white school, they will tell you everything, no nose ring, no earring, no false hair, and you will adhere to it. But when he says it, you think he's wrong because you see him as another nigger, and you got to stop seeing yourself as niggers. We are genteel folk. We are up and on the money folk, and we want the best for our community and the best for our children. And you must want that, too, unless you still want to remain a Negro. There will be no niggers coming into school is what he should put a sign up, because that's nigger mess. You bring the mess with you. You get someone to coincide with you. You fall out with them. You set up a scenario where they all gang up against him because you're looking for a problem to hatch and you're creating it. No. We're praying and shouting that stuff down. That won't be going on because we have devotees that are praying that that school fares well. We have devotees like myself that are calling on the ancestors to walk the chalk and to walk the hallways of that school to stop niggers that will come in there to bring up confusion and to tear down and root out. We are going to be on the money as watchmen on the wall, so don't even try it. And Dr. Umar, I hope you're listening to what I'm saying here, because you need some watchmen on the wall to deal with our folks. Our folks have become so corrupted that sometimes you wonder when they go to the school, want to take their earrings off and their shoes off and want to fight a teacher for what they're not doing at home. I've seen them do it. And they only take that chance with another black teacher. They won't do it to a white teacher because they're afraid of being thrown in jail. You've got to exemplify the same respect for your own brothers and sisters of the same hue of you. Don't take that mess into the Carter G. Woodson School or Marcus Garvey School. Don't take that mess into Dr. Umar's school because he's not having it. And he might even have to have some security there to keep you from bringing the rift to him. He's going to bring the fight to you up front. You can determine before you come to that school whether or not you're going to be a good candidate. Everybody won't be able to be saved. Some of you are going to want to stay in confusion and failure. Then he's going to have to let you stay there. And when you stay there, you're going to need to start building up some family resource centers. Because right now your children are in trouble who are signed up for special education. Those who have learning labels, they're in trouble because they don't know what to do next to mainstream your child or not. They've already given him an incomplete document that says that he can't learn and says that he only showed up and that the documents are no good to enter into the Army or into college. How could you let your child stay in school 16 years and come out with a document that says that they're not even adequate to go to anyone's college? They haven't even experienced the Common Core. The Common Core is not so bad in certain areas. And let me, on the defense of Common Core, they want better for those language-differentiated students. They want them to be taught to read. They want you to up the ante on English language. So you need to get behind English language, and you need to lobby for better teaching tactics, sending teachers back for professional development to learn how to implement reading programs so that all children in the school building can read. They're doing a disservice when they're not mandating that these teachers go back to school and learn the methodology for teaching phonemic awareness and for teaching the slide rule and decoding and encoding. Once they teach the proper procedures, every child can read. Every child wants to master those skills. I don't care what's going on in their noggin. They're not crazy and out of their mind. As long as you can hold their attention, you can teach that child that reading is fun and that it opens new doors for them. Now, let me also say, you're going to have a room to govern your parents until you can figure out which one are the really helper bees and which one are coming to start the racket. The ones that are coming to start the racket, dismiss them. Relieve them from their job. You don't need it. You don't even need to battle with it. Because I've seen parents that are so disruly that they want to fight the teachers. We're not having that. When the teachers are in there, they will respect them. And coming into new settings, you have to be very careful about the mindset of these parents and if they are mentally stable. So we got these schools in the community that are independent and that want to do something different for our black children. Give them a taste of their own black heritage. Show them, hello there. I think we got somebody in the room there. Let's see here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, who am I speaking with, 314?
You're speaking to Pianki. You know, I really appreciate you having a program describing school choice. And that is where parents have a right to choose what educational environment is best for their child and goes along with their long-term educational goals. And when they take their child and put them in that environment, the money that would otherwise go to the assigned or traditional seat would follow the child. And that's what school choice is all about, because you cannot, you know, if your child is coming from a functional background and the parent is doing what required of them to do, expected of them to do in order to expose the child and get them abreast of what it is that they should know. If they're sitting in a classroom, well, it may be two others like him. Well, they're going to get bored and get labeled up as not paying attention and not being challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that children should be evaluated. Just because you get a report card home, that report card have all A's on it, you don't go by that. You have that child independently evaluated. Take them to a Sliven, where they would sit their child down and run them through a battery of tests and come back and tell you exactly what grade level that they are performing at based on the questions that they was asked to answer.
You are so right on the money. Parents should do that independent evaluation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, here's the thing, too. This has to start early. You have to start early with that child. And you have to just, you know, we spend a lot of time with our kids on the football field. They take them to these, what they call combines, and they ask to run, and they measure. They ask to jump, then they measure. They ask to throw, then they're measured. And if they don't fall within a certain category, they don't make the team. So we can spend that type of energy in that entertainment activity. Why not do the same in education and preparing them for skills? Their skills should be prepared on what's going to be in demand.
Right.
You know,
right.
Believe it or not.
Here because they could be outdated. All that material can be outdated, and it's not preparing them for anything that's in demand or that is in the market. So they may come out with an antiquated education that is not meeting the digital requirement.
You're absolutely right. And there's a report that black students are overrepresented in low-paying majors. That don't make no sense.
Well, you know, sir, it's one of the things that I am doing this month where I actually have been invited. I'm a retired school teacher out of the consumer science and family education, and one of the areas that they frown upon in the public school for high school, most of the students that are black get steered away from the consumer science department, but therein lies a large repetition of jobs where they go in to take home economics, foods and nutrition, and then also they take clothing and textile, hospitality. So they get a chance to do child development, and they're actually placed in externships where they can go out of the building, they can work, and they can earn credentials. One of the things that no one talks about in the school, that a young man or a young lady can leave the school with a non-traditional credential that would allow them to have a diploma, and they could actually have a CDA, a Child Development Associate credential, that would allow them to come out of school, go and take a job as a head teacher in a child care center, as a director, or even open their own family child care. And I'm marketing and pushing that right now. I'm a candidate from Purdue University, and one of the things that we vow to do is to push these disciplines because they can equate a child to a great position, not only working stateside, but they could take a job internationally, working overseas for the government, the United States Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and take GS jobs that can go up to a GS-12, which is good money. And that's not talked about in the schools, and they're eliminating their home ec departments. I don't understand why.
Well, you know, there needs to be schools that's designed for specific things like aviation, maritime. Those are jobs that are be in high demand. A maritime job, you can work 8 months out of a year and earn $70,000 to $80,000 a year. In aviation, there's already the news has came out that there's going to be a shortage of over 400,000 aviators because of the retirees.
That's what the school needs to be looking at implementing. And I actually started out in engineering, and my son's an engineer. So one of the things that I'm noticing that most of the Caucasian schools they have is they have the engineering prep program and the biomedicine. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I push for is the STEMs, is that parents put your children in the STEMs program, science, technology, engineering, and math. So when they're in high school, they can actually take an engineering coding class.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And you have to add
they can be skilled.
You have to add another M to that, plus medicine, because black kids are absent from the medical field. Now, I work with the National Society of Black Engineers. I'm sure you have heard of that organization.
Yes,
NSBE.
Yes.
And, you know, the one in St. Louis, on third Saturday of the month, they have a workshop where members come in and they attend one of many different workshops for math, robotics, and general engineers. Sometimes I'm there. I would show the principal of bridges, highway bridges. And that gives that young person an opportunity to not only, well, they explore themselves. I've seen a young girl that was in the third grade, and she was so cute, had on her glasses, a notebook, and a pencil, and she was ready to go. They also have what's called a bridge program where the local college, University of Missouri St. Louis, working along with your Express Scripts, they have a bridge program where on Saturdays they come in at 9 o'clock till 1, and they do basically the same thing. We're talking about a lot of kids. Now, one thing I can say about NSBE, at the last two national conventions, Pittsburgh and Lawrence, Kansas, Northrop Grumman, the defense contractor, they hired 400.
Are you saying Northrop, Throp?
Northrop, Northrop. Yeah, Northrop Grumman.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do they have an office out of Elk Grove Village, Illinois?
I'm not sure. I think they're out of Washington State.
They have one that did the B-1 bomber that's in Illinois.
Yeah, there
Elk
you
Grove.
Go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
let me tell you what they did.
I used to be an engineer assistant for them. I was the schedule planner, and I worked with the engineers to prepare all the engineers for the projects.
That's good. I mean, they need to be talking about you on Black History Month instead of talking about people 100 years ago. But they hired 400 STEM graduates right off the showroom floor 2 years in a row for a total of 800 in 2 years. Can you imagine that? Not including the other corporations that was there.
Well, see, they were pushing to bring women in back in 1988 was when I worked for them out in mm-hmm. Elk Grove Village, and they were really pushing for women. I had started at Purdue Engineering Graphic, and then I switched over to teaching. But with my 2 years of visual design, they needed me to do some visual design work, so I was able to get in under a contract because I was the first female they hired on the team as a scheduled planner. And one of the things that I'm seeing the schools are doing is that they're keeping it very hush. The public schools and the black schools are not getting these departments for the engineering and biomedicine. But one of the things I started is working with Indigenous Girls Can Code and teaching them how to code. And
mm-hmm.
also in the medical field coding, because I work for Blue Cross Blue Shield, and we had to train the women in anatomy, physiology, and then how to do their medical terminology so they can actually do the coding. So there's a big push for women in the medical field that I do a show once a week where I talk about women coming into the medical records field and the coding area. And these are the things we need to be training our students for, not all this antiquated stuff, you know.
Well, let me ask you something. You know, my grandson, I pushed him into engineering and also business. I said, you're going to have an engineering major and a business minor. He's got one more semester to go. He should graduate this May.
What school?
Louisiana State. He's taking gas and petroleum mm-hmm. engineering. And he also plays baseball. He's been playing baseball since he was 5 years old. So I stress that and also the academics. And he's going to graduate, but I want him to go ahead and get his degree in business with the energy minor, and also try to have at least that master's in gas and petroleum. But
that's a good path to put him on. Let him know that he should apply while he's still in. He's still in undergrad for his graduate degree, because that's just another 30 hours that he's going to have to pull. And he can get into that real quick and walk away at a manager's level where they have to pay him a certain amount of money. You know?
Absolutely. And you know what else I got him doing is I want him to get his drone certification, his FAA certification 7, and CAD. 3D printing.
Yeah, I'm familiar with CAD CAM.
I know you are.
CAD CAM.
Yeah, listen to what you just got through saying. I know you know all about that. The animation
A great opportunity with Motorola. They actually exposed us to the CAD CAM when I worked for them. And there are a lot of women now don't realize the demand for women to come into the profession, and they're leading these girls to these traditional fields. And the reason why I said consumer science, because they can still get into the allied health profession, and there's a big shortage for our allied health profession. We can get young children working in the lab, getting that exposure in the lab, and then be on a path to not only get just a bachelor's degree, but their PhD degree.
Oh, absolutely. Let me ask you a question. What city are you in?
I'm in the state of Indiana.
Now, you just retired, you say?
Yeah, I retired. I retired back in 2008, and I started my own firm, started my own training system, where I actually had adult education and offered them opportunities to go to school. And I was extending the co-parenting facilitating license to the judge. I had a judge working with me, and we were actually endorsing people to get their co-parenting facilitator's license, so that some of these mothers can get their children out of foster care. So I use most of my retirement to assist and aid them and bringing people in for adult education training. And I was connected to an actual college where the college, I was an extension of another Christian college, so that we can offer some credentials in our community, you know.
Well, you know, I don't like to tell people what to do, but if you can find some time, try to work with the local chapter, the National Society of Black Engineers, and share
something that I definitely would like to get my son involved in. Give me those acronyms again. You said NASA?
It's NSBE. It's the National Society of Black Engineers. And I think you would be in Region 5 in Indiana. And
Region
I'm sure... Yeah, sure. If you go to their website, that's NSBE.org, and you can do further investigation, you can find a contact there in Indiana, probably in your city, or probably they got chapters either at the high school or at one of the local colleges, because they own practically every college level. And what they do at the college level, they work with African-American students to make sure that they don't give up. You know, if they have a problem with their college entrance math, either Calc 1 or whatever, they're there to give them assistance to make sure that they don't walk away from
it. Let me ask you a question. Would it be possible, your son, you said he's in a school in St. Louis, or what did you say?
No, he's in Louisiana. He attends Louisiana State University. Yeah.
Okay. Because I was explaining to my son, who is a computer engineer, who actually I wanted him to start mentoring some children and mentoring young men who were almost there, because he was an honors student throughout. And when he graduated with honors, do you know they didn't want to put his name in the honors book, but they gave him his honors plaque, you know, but they didn't want to put his name there. And he also graduated speaking fluent German. And I
told him, I said,
you need to look at some international opportunities. I would like to see him create something. You were talking about the drones. I would like for him to talk with your group and talk about creating something of his own, like a drone, because I think that's possible.
Well, there's a lot of opportunities commercially if you understand and know how to operate drones. I tell you something else I want to do is get his private pilot license, because that makes them think beyond that. That makes them think critically and pay attention. If you start putting their minds toward it, you know what I'm talking about. But I will share any information that I possibly can. I can, and what I don't know, I would make it available for you, because
you know
you have a lot to
offer.
I actually have
some information. I do have some information about getting your license as a pilot. Someone actually put that in my hand, and being a curriculum specialist in school, I was always getting this information about being a pilot, and I asked my son, I said, is that something you think you would like to do? He said, oh, yeah. And I told him, you know, don't get stuck on these lower-level frequencies, because you're vibrating at a higher frequency. So he does photography on the side, but I was like, that's a good frequency, but I think you have more creativity than that to be challenged. And I told him to continue to be challenged in the profession, and that to leave a legacy of something that you've created or done. So I'm all for that.
You got a pencil and paper?
Yeah.
I want you to write my email down, and you email me. Oh, I tell you what, you got you got my phone number. Now, this is my desk phone.
Well, what's your email?
My email is L as in Larry, C as in Charlie. The word steel, STEEL, like the metal. Mindspring, mind in your head, spring on a car, MindSpring.com.
Okay.
And you email me.
Steel. I used to know some steels. Okay.
Well, I was in the steel erection business.
In a what?
In the steel erection business for almost four decades. That's the STEEL, like the metal steel, yeah. LC, Lima Charlie Steel. Yeah, but email me.
You were in the steel business? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I used to put up tall buildings like the one that fell down at 9/11.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you were actually building in construction.
Yes, buildings, bridges, industrial work. Stuff like that, yes. Started doing that when I was 19.
So how is your grandson, how is he doing in school?
He's doing fine now. And you see, here's the thing. When they come out of high school, and especially, you know, these high schools. Well, he came out of pretty good high school, but it's not as good as it used to be. And they like, you know, in these inner city schools, they like to give these kids these accolades. And what it does, it gives them a false sense of confidence. Because when you hit college that first year, you know what happens. And they begin, it's like a slap in the face with cold water. So they can become discouraged, but you have to keep pushing them. Wanting to change their majors and all that. No, you ain't changing your major.
They will give them a lot of high grades to exemplify that they belong in your advanced classes. Then when they go off to school, and they come in there and want to go to those 200 level, they say, oh, no, you're not at the standard of a 200 level, and it busts their bubble because they really are not advanced. And a lot of students begin those those advanced standing classes, so when they get there, they try to take high-level classes, and they bump them back and say, no.
I tell you what, I'm going to send you.
Did you say your email was LC?
LC, Lima Charlie, yes.
Okay.
LC Steel.
Now, what were you saying?
At Mindspring. I'm going to send you also, I do a lecture with parents occasionally, and I try to lecture them on how to prepare their child for higher education, like some of the things we just got through mentioning. And I'll send you a copy of that. And it has resource information on it, tutoring, scholarship information. I have a lot of things broken down that I go over with the parents, and I tell them you need to start as early as the third grade with that child. And by the sixth grade, you should at least know what direction that they're going. Information is out there. There's employment trends, professional trends that's out there. And you as an engineer, you know less than 4% of the engineers in the United States are African American. We don't even represent our population in society, and that's really a shame.
Sure is. It's definitely a shame. Well, the thing of it is that most parents think that their child has to be so brilliant. And the thing that started my son off in this profession is that I was using the computer, and he began to start teaching me about the hardware. So we were in competition, and I bought him a computer so he could learn all the parts. And he was only 11 years old then, and he was one of the most sought-after 11-year-olds for being a geek squad. So because he ventured in that direction and I told him that you can be an engineer, he oftentimes told people, I'm going to be an engineer. So we pushed and pushed him, and finally he started doing all this geek work. And by the time he went to college, he was already a geek. And they were like, well, you know all this. And I used to get calls from his school to ask me, did this child live in Germany? How does he know how to speak German so fluent? I said, yes, I spent a year overseas on tour, 5 years overseas on tour during 9/11, to be exact, where he got most of his experience from a couple of my analysts that work with me. And he was always wanting to go and learn from the analysts. So I had the analysts come and spend 3 hours with me, and it would be all time spent with him. So he got one-on-one time. But he did turn out to be one of the most excellent engineers that we have, I mean, in the hardware business. But I told him, don't just stop there. Venture in other avenues, because you might find that you get bored with the computers and it burns you out. Then look at something else. But, you know, I know he's very creative, so I'm telling him, look at some other avenues where you can exploit yourself in doing different things, because when you're just troubleshooting machines, you get burnt out.
But that's true. And what field of engineering is he in?
He's in computer
electrical
science.
Computer science. Okay. Yeah, you did say that.
So he had a minor in the business end of it. So he's at the height of his career now. He's doing management as well as engineering. But I know that he likes to be in the background doing the technician work. So this would probably solve that problem to create something and get a patent on it, you know.
Yeah, he's got to think about that. He has to also have in mind on creating something that will solve problems. And by doing that,
because that's all it is. It's problem solving. What can you create to solve something? I've been working on a project with him. I was talking to him about a hologram that would represent your email. So you're not going through all these emails. You just get the hologram, read it, it vanishes, it goes to the archive. And I'm just sitting up here trying to figure out how to create that.
Well, it'd be nice if you could have a conference call with holograms. With, you know, you would have 3D holograms. People would be standing right there at all around the room. So those things are all possible. You just got to put your mind to it. It's very unusual.
Because,
I have opportunity.
That would actually allow you to read the email, and you would have firsthand experience of that person being there. So whatever they wanted to tell you, you wouldn't be going back and forth. They could tell you, and you'd be done with it, you know?
And nowadays they have these full-size scanners that you can scan. You can scan the whole side of the automobile and put that up for display to be viewed in your presentation or discussion and trying to show someone key areas where you're having problems. You know, I really appreciate, what's your name again?
My name is Sherelle.
Sherelle, mine is Pianki, P-I-A-N-K-I. And
P-I-A-N-K-I, okay.
Yes.
That's your last name. And you
no,
said
that's
that
my
you guys
first
are
name.
In the Oh, that's the first name. Okay. You said that you guys, Steele is your last name. You said that you guys are in
No, it's my company name was, that's the name of my, part of the name of the company that I own. I was in Steele Erection. Right now, what I do is I work with some Nigerians on the development of seaports, ammonia plants, power generating stations. And I'm also going to be working with some on the building of poultry like chicken house, mega size.
So okay, so your Distill is not your last name, then.
No, that was the business I was in. I was a Still Erector.
Oh, okay. So what's your last name?
Well, my last name, when you email me, I'll tell you my last name.
Okay. Yeah,
I have an unusual name. My name is Nigerian. Yes. But anyway, it's very uncommon for me to have.
So if your name is Nigerian, then you're familiar with the Yoruba people then. I'm very familiar
yes,
with Nigerian.
My name is Pianki Bankole.
Bankole.
My name is real long. Pianki Bankole Akin Wale Kofi Nefakara. So it's a real long name.
Are you connected to the Yoruba people and the Ifa?
Well, we are the Yoruba because Bankole Akin Wale is Yoruba.
Okay.
You know,
well,
names in us.
The name I gave you was my slave name, but I'm Omiyinka.
Omiyinka.
Y-I-N-K-A 7. So I'm Yoruba too. I trained with them for Chief Metahochi Zanu. I don't know if you knew him, because he would go over to Africa frequently, and I actually became a priestess under him, Chief Metahochi, and also Shabazz was also a part of our training up in Milwaukee, because we received most of our training.
I know. You know a lady up in Milwaukee by the name of school teacher, and I can't think of her name. Doggone it!
What's her name?
She was a, huh? I can't think of her name.
Her name?
I can't think of it right now. She was a school teacher. She's retired. There was a guy named Osi up in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I know Ochi. It's called Ochi. He's Ochi.
Ochi. Then Shabazz, looking up a guy named Shabazz. He had built a household in Ghana.
Yes, Shabazz is my godfather. He's my godfather. Yes, he trained me, Shabazz, Ronald Shabazz.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
then there was Ochi, and then let's see, Oluboni. Did you know him?
I don't know Oluboni.
Oluboni was a storyteller. I'm sure you knew him.
Mm-hmm.
He was Teju Lamar.
And see, you had two girls there that went to the Cuban medical school.
Okay.
Because we had an organization.
That.
Huh? That was not too long ago. We had an organization that supported them.
I'm familiar with them because they tried to recruit me to go over to Cuba to get a free doctorate.
Free medical, right.
Free medical. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was two sisters,
yeah,
one of them.
When I got out of grad school, they were trying to recruit me to come there, but I was a little leery about being in Cuba, because, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted to offer their assistant in training African-Americans to get their M.D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I have a brother that's a doctor. His name is Jamel. He's an alternative doctor, and he treated quite a few people up in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, you know that whole circle of people. Then, if you know Shabazz and Chief Metahochi, I'm trying to think who else you would probably know.
Well, see, we was with the National Black United Front some time ago, and Oshi was head of the chapter there in Milwaukee.
Yeah, Oshi was a fireman, and
he's a fireman. He's in Atlanta now.
Uh huh. Yeah, I know Ochi. Mm-hmm. That's my good friend.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see who else. Oh, my God, because it's been a while since I've been there. We were in the movement to start choice schools, and I was with Taki Ratan.
Taki,
him?
He passed away.
Yeah, he passed away. He was a part of the team that I was working with where I had rented the hotel so we could do the school there at the Milwaukee Hotel.
Yeah, Michael Holt, he wrote the book, Not Yet Free at Last.
Yes, Well, see, we was in a circle because I was going to the training with Chief Metahochi to get my initiated in Yamanye and Obatala. So I went through that training with them. Yeah, I got a website out there where I tell the whole story about Shabazz and Chief Metahochi. Shabazz got the house over in Africa and things didn't go well. And I got to check on them, see how they're doing, because he ended up coming back to the States.
Yeah, the land is still there. But, you know, you also tell your son that Nigeria is going to be the place to be. It's going to be a lot of
really?
Millionaires made in that country.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting off in an infancy state. You need to find somebody to partner with. And, you know, it's going to be wide open in many, many different fields. And Nigeria is very intelligent. But that's where
well,
it's going to be. It's going
to
be there.
The capital is in Abuja, and I always wanted to go to Abuja and see what was going on there. You know, what took me
You know
over
a lady by the name
Germany.
Of Jeanette?
Jeanette, what's her last name?
Egg, I don't know what Jeanette's
from?
Last name is. She's Milwaukee. She was a teacher there. She's another person that I know very close.
That name
from,
Milwaukee. Familiar. I know a lot of the people in Milwaukee. I bet if I saw her, I would know her. Because, you know, we used to go to all the, we had like a communal for our house. And we used to all, you know, eat together and travel together. And did you know Abbas Yassin?
I think I did.
He was the older guy. He passed away. He ended up getting beat pretty bad on the bus, and he didn't recuperate from the beating. And he was my godfather, Abbas, and his wife was named Hanan.
The field that you're in, it's very seldom I have opportunity to speak to someone on the level that you're able to have a conversation with. And it makes me feel good.
Well, after I retired, I basically retired as a teacher and as an adjunct of a junior college and teaching. Yeah, I went back into that field when I came back from the States. But when I came back from the States, I basically did six more years and then I retired. And I hadn't been into the engineering since 1988, but I had a knack for it because I was a visual designer, and basically I could use my skills in visual design. So my skill was visual design, that I was going into graphic artistry, visual design, and now my son is kind of picking up the photography. But I told him, I said, you know, that's a good hobby to have, but it's just a hobby because people don't want to pay. But in the meantime, he's got such a big responsibility now in the job that he has, he doesn't want to take on another job. But I said, down the road, you need to look at contracting, being a 1099, and contract your own service out and start your own agency. And he did that before he started working in the private industry. He actually was a 1099. He contracted all his work, and he was running himself ragged trying to do all that contracted work.
Mm-hmm. But if you can, I'll send you information about Nesby, and they could...
Now, spell your last name for me, because I started writing B-A-N.
Well, my Bankole, B-A-N-K-O-L-E. You can find me on Facebook under that name. But when you send me that email, it'll have my last name on it when I reply to you.
Well, it's unusual that I would run into somebody from there. You brought up all these old memories of these... You know, these people that were romantically connected to me, you know, family. And that's a good thing. Sometimes people bring up names of old friends who really have no meaning or connection. But these are people I ran with, and we were considering going back to Africa with Shabazz because he had convinced everyone that they had some land.
Well, that land is still older.
That
32,000 acres
still
is still older. Well, don't nobody, you know, nobody's going to go over there, hardly.
Oh, Shabazz ran the gamut with me. He was my godfather. He was my teacher. And his wife, Joyce Shabazz, we were the closest of friends. So, you know, I'm going to definitely have to connect with you because if these are your people, I ride with them.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you get back to your show.
Right.
And I really appreciate
so
you, and I look forward
in.
For the email. Okay.
All right, then. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was one of our callers. He was reminding me of all the other people that I left behind so nice to speak with Van Coley. We did have a very, very extensive conversation about schools and education. And if you're out there and would like to call in, you can call in on our line, and that is 760-539-3247. Please do call in and give us your two cents. Put your hat in the ring. Tell us what you think about independent schools. Should black people support black-ran independent schools in their community? Should they use their money to pull away from these illustrious private schools and bring them to those new schools that are just setting up, who have not developed a reputation? I say give them a chance, because just going to a school with someone that has a vested interest in your child and looks like you means all the world to most people, and it would to me as well. But it's very vital that we should not be discriminative against our own, because we think what white folks have is the best thing. It's not always the most appropriate thing for our children to be housed in an atmosphere where there's no one that looks like them. It's sometimes best to put your child where children mimic each other, because African children learn from a different perspective. They all learn together, and there must be an African methodology introduced where we all start together and we all finish together. It's none of this independent pronoun I. It is a communal concept. So whoever brings in a curriculum, it must be set and embedded in a communal concept, teaching the child communal learning style. And once that is introduced and they are happy and they have good self-esteem, if you teach a child to have good self-esteem, you don't have to worry about the academics. If a child feels like he can heed and he can excel, he will do well at whatever you put to his fingertips. And most children are saddened. Most children are worried. Most children are unhappy, and they are hoping that they make it through the day. And most children don't think that they have a chance to soar and to prosper. They are fearing society. They're fearing what could happen to them. And when you are living by fear, you are not indulging your best self in education. So we cannot put our children in isolated places just because they're supposed to be high academics there. And then when they get there, they finally run into all type of supervision and managerial problems. And then there's no support there to support them. They're all alone. We leave our children so isolated. And then we say, but they're getting a better education. Mothers, you have to go check in on these so-called private schools that you're isolating your black child from. I've known people who thought they were doing the right thing and isolated their two black daughters in this all-white schools, and they had nothing but trouble. The children never could fit in. The teachers will not sensitize themselves to working with black children. They refuse to work with the large numbers of white children to sensitize them to be a better team player, to accept those children. So there can be nothing but chaos. So we're talking about black businessmen coming into our community, like a Dr. Umar Johnson, bringing in a school and having it as an all-around-the-clock school where children stay overnight. And we're talking about giving him the keys and the responsibility to governing our children both night and day. Now, you have to get to know the person that you are giving that kind of attention to. And once you do that and you find out he has the investment of that child, you must learn to trust. But parents are going to have to do a lot of trusting when they put their children in these boarding schools and making sure that they're supporting that district and that school and helping as much as they can. We are finding out mothers are tearing down their house with their own hand because we have such terrible thinking about what can happen, and we don't have the best interest of that independent school. I say black people should give it a try. I say they should give it a chance and support their own in their own community. It can't be that worse than a public school that has been failing our children. We have to see that we have to do something much better. We have to give and support the school. Get behind Dr. Umar. Get behind that school and wish him well. Support him. Those of you who have children that are going to be enrolling them, get behind him and support him. Give him all of the utmost respect you can give him. And stand up in the gap for this young man who is attempting to make your child a better man. You've been a great listening audience, and I thank you so much for being here with me these whole 90 minutes. And thanks to Mr. Ben Coley for calling in, giving us his 2 cents. Please call in next time at 760-539-3247. We'll be on again tomorrow. We will look forward to hearing from you. And once again, support your own. Support black schools and black-run schools in your community. Thank you, and we're going to be checking out of here now. This is Omienka saying, please do subscribe to this channel and support this channel and become a follower of this channel. Oh, double, baba booey to you, y'all.